Delly Cartwright is a pasty-faced, lumpy girl with yellowish hair who looks about as much like our server as a beetle does a butterfly. She may also be the friendliest person on the planet. She smiles constantly at everybody in school, even me. I've never seen the girl with the red hair smile, but I jump on Peeta's suggestion gratefully. "Of course, that's who I was thinking of. It must be the hair," I say.
"Something about the eyes, too," says Peeta.
The energy at the table relaxes.
"Oh, well, if that's all it is," says Cinna.
"And yes, the cake has spirits, but all the alcohol is burned off. I ordered it specially in honor of your fiery debut."
We eat the cake and move into a sitting room to watch the replay of the opening ceremonies that's being broadcast. A few of the other couples make a nice impression, but none of them can hold a candle to us. Even our own party lets out an "ah" as they show us coming out of the remake center.
"Whose idea was the hand-holding?" asks Hamish.
"Cinna's," says Portia.
"Just the perfect touch of rebellion," says Hamish.
"Very nice."
Rebellion? I have to think about that one a moment. But when I remember the other couples, standing stiffly apart, never touching or acknowledging each other, as if their fellow tribute did not exist, as if the games had already begun, I know what Hamish means. Presenting ourselves not as adversaries, but as friends, has distinguished us as much as the fiery costumes.
"Tomorrow morning is the first training session. Meet me for breakfast, and I'll tell you exactly how I want you to play it," says Hamish to Peeta and I. "Now, go get some sleep while the grown-ups talk."
Peeta and I walk together down the corridor to our rooms. When we get to my door, he leans against the frame, not blocking my entrance exactly, but insisting I pay attention to him.
"So, Delly Cartwright. Imagine finding her lookalike here."
He's asking for an explanation, and I'm tempted to give him one. We both know he covered for me. So here I am, in his debt again. If I tell him the truth about the girl, somehow that might even things up. How can it hurt, really? Even if he repeated the story, it couldn't do me much harm. It was just something I witnessed. And he lied as much as I did about Delly Cartwright. I realize I do want to talk to someone about the girl. Someone who might be able to help me figure out her story. Gail would be my first choice, but it's unlikely I'll ever see Gail again. I try to think if telling Peeta could give him any possible advantage over me, but I don't see how. Maybe sharing a confidence will actually make him believe I see him as a friend. Besides, the idea of the girl with her maimed tongue frightens me. She has reminded me why I'm here. Not to model flashy costumes and eat delicacies, but to die a bloody death while the crowds urge on my killer. To tell or not to tell. My brain still feels slow from the wine. I stare down the empty corridor as if the decision lies there. Peeta picks up on my hesitation. "Have you been on the roof yet?" I shake my head. "Cinna showed me. You can practically see the whole city. The wind's a bit loud, though." I translate this into, "No one will overhear us talking," in my head. You do have the sense that we might be under surveillance here. "Can we just go up?"
"Sure, come on," says Peeta.
I follow him to a flight of stairs that lead to the roof. There's a small dome-shaped room with a door to the outside. As we step into the cool, windy evening air, I catch my breath at the view. The capital twinkles like a vast field of fireflies. Electricity in District 12 comes and goes. Usually we only have it a few hours a day. Often the evenings are spent in candlelight. The only time you can count on it is when they're airing the games, or
some important government message on television that it's mandatory to watch. But here, there would be no shortage ever.